Welcome. Welcome to the June 12th regular school board meeting. At this time, would you all please rise? Join with me in saying the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Contrary to the weather, it is summer. School is out. So on behalf of the Board of Trustees, I'd like to welcome everyone to this JCSD 1 regular school board meeting for June. Even though it is summer break, the district has been super busy with PLC conferences, budgets, hiring, maintenance, planning, taking classes, summer school, state meetings, and that list goes on and on. So again, I appreciate everybody being here. Whether you're attending in person, on online streaming, or on 307 net. At this time, I ask you to make sure your cell phones are off, of course. Before we go into public comment, if we have any, I'd like to introduce Jackie Galley. She will be our new reporter from the Buffalo Bulletin. Jackie, you're from where in Louisiana?
New Orleans.
Yeah. So she's in a huge culture shock here. We do not have humidity.
No.
And we usually don't have this much rain. So we welcome you.
I guess I brought it with me. I don't know.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Roll call. Jody will be here in just a few minutes. So with that, everybody is here. No public comment, like we've said. May I have a motion to accept first? Do we have any addition to the agenda? So, may I have a motion to accept the agenda as presented?
So moved.
And a second, please.
I'll second it.
The discussion. All those in favor of the agenda as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We will go with our agenda. Okay. Now, this is something we haven't done in the past, so if I am a little rough here, we will get through this. May I have a motion to enter into the mill levy hearing?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? And the intent for mill levy, which is just, it's the same. So, all those in favor of entering into the mill levy hearing, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, so we are now officially into the mill levy hearing. Connie, you want to help us kind of get through this?
Yes. What we decided Wednesday at the work session is to begin a new tradition of having an intent to levy, and we'll do that in May, if you guys are okay with that, and we'll do a public levy hearing in May with the intent to levy a mill levy for the Johnson County Rec Board and a half a levy, half a mill for the Bochees. Now, that is what you would have to decide in your motion later in the meeting. But this is for a public comment of anybody wanting to discuss or talk to you about the mill levies that you will be approving later on in the meeting.
This is where they would do that if they have a conference.
Public comment. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Madam Chair. I don't think I'm going to make a comment.
So you can make your comment.
I'm going to use the time for me to make a comment. It's just in looking at, because I don't think that most people really go in and look at what this money goes to. We are giving the YMCA $70,000 a year for our kids to use the pool. That's outrageous.
Can I tell you that that's actually, believe it or not, cheap? Whereas Cody is over almost $1 million. I think it's like We're giving almost $100,000. Did I say maybe?
Yeah, yes. Almost $100,000 would give.
Yeah. That would be Cody. And Powell, it got so expensive for them at their place, they decided to go to Cody.
So we have 60,000 going to them. $15,000 to repair an irrigation system at the golf course, which is a private entity.
No, it's not. It's public.
Well, it's a city entity, but it's run on its own.
Randy.
It's definitely not a school district.
Are these
golf course?
Is this from last year, or is this this year's proposed one?
These are the approved 2022.
These are last year's expenses. They aren't this year's
right.
That apply. Okay.
I mean, we can't get the.
We haven't seen those.
We haven't seen one. $20,000 to the outdoor pool, and I'm just going over some of the big dollar amounts. $15,000 for the trail system. $40,000 for YMCA membership support. $10,000 to the Bomber Mountain Civic Center. $15,000 to the fair board. The problem that I have is we're letting $400,000 ish, right? So give or take $400,000 is what we're
$255,000 ish.
The totals that
I'm sorry, no, you're right. Sorry, I'm thinking of Bochy's. No, you're right. $510,000, yeah.
So we're taking $500,000 from the county. And then we're giving it to this board. And a lot of it has nothing to do firsthand with the school district. And then we have no accountability for any of this money. And so the golf course says that they're spending $15,000 on the irrigation system. One, that has nothing to do with the school district. And two, I have no idea if they are spending $15,000 on that or something else.
So can I clear that up a little bit? I know I'm very new on the rec board, but there is a process that everyone who gets a grant, then they have to, before they can get that money, they tell us what they're spending it on, obviously. We approve it, and then they need to submit all of their receipts for their project.
Okay.
So there is very clear accountability of where their money is being spent. They have to be extremely specific when it comes to every place that they're going to spend their money, whether it be 7 trikes and they've cost this much money, or one, you know, bike station that would cost this much money.
So how do we account for, like, pool usage?
As in the YMCA or the city?
But either one.
Well, that's a good question, because I don't know. I mean, I guess what's the
I'm not asking you specifically. We have to be able to figure out if... And this is aside from just the rec board stuff. If $50,000 is, and that's just what they're getting from the rec board, I think we have a ridiculous allotment in just the general budget for it, don't we?
I don't think so. It's not real. That's why we've gone to them. Otherwise, we would have to fork over the $50,000.
Well, I would just cut the swim program is what I would do if that were the case. But that's outrageous to spend that much money to a private company. But if we're spending it for the students, and if they can reconcile that amount and say here's what that money goes to, then that's fine. You know, but I would definitely like to see that. But you know, I'm not gonna support this at all. I think it's ridiculous that we're playing a shell game with tax money under our name, and you know we're basically using the school district to tax the county because there's no other way to tax the county, and we're just, you know, just like you told us the other day, we are a vehicle, and that's what we're being used as, and I think it's wrong,
I think most of the general public don't know about it, and you know, I won't support it. So,
and just so you know, like the golf course, we do too. We use it.
So, Janet,
we have boy and girl golf teams. We use it in the fall. We use it in the spring.
And how much money do we spend at the golf course?
We don't actually pay. My understanding is
everything we do there
kids,
is free.
Yes,
right.
The golf course does not charge.
What I'm saying is for the 10 kids that are on the golf course, or how many, however many kids we have on the golf team, is that worth us? You know, if green fees and that kind of stuff can't, you know, if we need help with that, then we can help them with that. But I don't need to put in a new irrigation system. And that's where it gets shady to me, is we're funding our golf team with this, but we're basically renovating the golf course, which is a public golf course. And this is what got a lot of people outraged whenever they tried to tack on the additional mill here a few years ago that everybody got pissed off about because there all these pet projects were added on to it. And that's exactly what this looks like when you start looking at it, is it's just a bunch of different, an assortment of odds and ends that don't really have anything to do with the school district. It's just, you know, you could round about, you know, say that it can benefit our kids in some way, and I just don't agree with it.
Okay, thank you.
So I'll just add my two cents to it. So it's actually a tax, which for the average taxpayer probably amounts to $25 to $30 a year. Okay, so your taxes, the county couldn't do it because they had already levied all of their mills. So they asked the school district to do it. Maybe I'm telling you guys stuff you already know. So they asked the school district to do it, okay? So the school district wanted some accountability. So that's why the school district appoints the entire board. And then when Grace Gosar was on there, there's a few things she didn't like, and then that's when we started appointing someone from the school board on there. Okay, so remember, the rec district funds recreation for all ages of people, from little kids to the school to older people. That's why you have a pool. That's why you have the golf course, whatnot. When the YMCA was built, they knew it was never a standalone entity. It was going to need help from the taxpayer, which everybody agreed to. The YMCA is a great asset to this community as people. The Bighorn Mountains are great. Buffalo is a beautiful place. But when people look to move here, they look to see what you have, and the YMCA attracts people. We have the Boys and Girls Club, which, if I remember right, got about $90,000 last year. So we give a lot of money to a lot of different things, but it's all for recreation for our community. And it's the taxpayers who fund it, not the school. The school could levy this mill to where they want to levy it, but they decided a long time ago that the school had enough to do, so let's appoint a board and let them deal with it. So that's my two cents.
Anybody else?
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I also took a long, hard look. I was not quite of the understanding of exactly how it worked, and so I, after our explanation on Wednesday night, took a long, hard look and looked at the last year's the proposals, what was being proposed, and then what was given out. And I am in agreement with Randy on some certain things. I do understand that it is for all ages and that they did agree at one time. However, times have changed, and I think that people are hopefully paying better attention. And however, a majority of everything that was given out last year was something to do with kids. I appreciate the fact that they do offer transparency. However, I think that we as a board could come to some sort of an agreement on where we could, if it's something that we want to have a little bit better eye on and a little bit, you know, better itemized, that we have the right to ask for that. We have a right to see that. We do appoint the board, and I think that somehow we could come together as a team, and we can make this work better, and we can help them along. I understand that we appoint a board to make the best decisions. However, all in all, we are the head of that board, and we were elected by the people. We are here to represent the people of this county and to be fiscally responsible with their funds. And so while I do support a majority of this, I think that we need to come together and figure out a way that we can have a bit more transparency with the Recreation Board.
I think when we had that work session, mm-hmm. that Jack Charter was here, mm-hmm. and he did give me the list up from the day one when this rec board was created, where every penny has been spent, what has been given out. So I do have that.
Okay.
And he was not, he told me, please share this if they need it. And I feel terrible because I didn't bring it. I just looked in there. And
I'm not pointing fingers at anybody.
But I'm happy to do that every time. And if you guys want to go through it from the beginning to really see, because I looked at it thinking, how much is the school actually getting? And like I told you, Randy, they really do receive more than anyone else, and they have, for, you know, all of their programs that they do. But I guess that's another thing you have to look at. Do we want to support these kids with these things like this, or not at all?
So I think, Madam Chair, one of the things that if people are unclear of is go and look at their vision and mission statement. You can look at their bylaws. And you're welcome to look at any of that stuff anytime, because there is a deal called the Freedom of Information Act where it's public money. Nobody can withhold you. So you can ask Jack Carter, whoever you want to. It has to be provided.
Well, I will tell you this. I have 100% confidence in how the rec board is run. And Jack Carter has been the head of that as far as keeping the books. He's been fully transparent. That's why we have Marcia on the board. So I think the rec board has done an excellent job of keeping us involved in what's happening on that rec board. It's in the paper as to what every penny is spent. So I'm very comfortable with our rec board and how it's going. So anybody else?
Madam Chair. Just my own personal feeling about taxpayers' money, and I always have this thought of, if you want nice things, we have to pay for them. We can't expect to, you know, have facilities in our community and not be able to support them. And personally, as a mom of three boys coming up and wanting other children to move here, I think it's very important that we help these things that provide recreation in our community. But that's just my personal feelings on it, and it's hard to make everything survive on its own and stand on its own. And if you don't like that, sometimes I feel like, well, maybe we should move to a community that other people want to support. But maybe I'm an outlier in that too.
If people want to support the golf course, then they should support the golf course. If they want to support the YMCA, they should support the YMCA. The people that can't afford to, probably the 90% of the general public that can't afford to be members at the YMCA aren't members. And the fact that they can't afford to do that and aren't members, and there's a very select small percentage of people that are members of the YMCA, that's why they need to funnel money from the school district to support the maintenance of their pools and the maintenance of their other programs. Same thing with the golf course. If the general public wants to support the golf course, and this is what the community said when they overwhelmingly, voted against the tax effort this last time. They didn't want to support the Bomber Mountain Civic Center. They didn't want to support JOCO. They didn't want to support all these pet projects like the golf course. Because if you want to support those projects, let those people that utilize those facilities, let them support them. That's what they said then, and that's what I believe now. If we don't spend things on nice things, we can't have nice things. But there's a vast amount of people in this community that can't afford to spend money on nice things. And so just because some people can't afford it, and then most people can't afford it, doesn't mean that we should subsidize it for, even still the select few, because we're subsidizing the YMCA, we're subsidizing the golf course, yet you still have to pay a fee to get in. You still have to pay a membership to be a member. And, I called it a shell game, and that's
kind of what I'll continue to call it. It's public information, but as you know, just being involved in the school board, the public doesn't pay attention to everything that goes on. And so, if there's a blurb in there about, the different allotments that were, grant allotments that were awarded by the rec district, most of the public is not going to really pay any attention to that, in my opinion. But, that's all I'll say about that.
Randy, there is, if you do go on to the rec board website, it does have everything. I don't know if you took a
look. I'm not saying anything about transparency, or I understand that all of that is there. What I'm saying is I think the general public would be, I don't have the words, if they understood how much money we're giving the YMCA just to let our swim team practice there. For a portion of the year. Same thing with the school district buying or spending to, I don't know what they're doing with the irrigation system, but if that's to repair the irrigation system or something like that, if I as a Joe Public understood that the school district was paying for the golf course to repair their irrigation system, that didn't make sense to me.
I don't know anything about that because that was not when I was on the board. I do know what they're asking for this year, and it is very much all for the school.
And I also,
when you say that it was very overwhelming in that vote, that was a special election vote, so I don't think that can be really a true indicator of how the public feels. That was pushed through extremely quickly. And no, how many people even come? I mean, if you looked at the totals of how many people came out to vote for that special election, it wasn't that many. It was not like, if they would have had that on a regular ballot, on a regular election year, I think then we could have a more honest answer.
I think it would have been even more.
I disagree with that.
The JoCo First and the Bomber Mountain people were the ones that...
Okay, let's kind of get back to our...
So, Madam Chair, just for clarification, too, it's not only just a swim team, but they provide swimming for the elementary and some of the little kids throughout the year, too. So,
it's a whole different.
So, for use for facilities, so
that's another. Yep. That's another allotment. Wasn't that like an additional 10 or 20 grand or something like that?
Yeah, but I just want to make sure that they are supporting the school with some of the swim stuff, too. Yeah.
I really disagree with your idea of a shell game. It makes it sound like they're being sneaky, and they are not. Everything is transparent. This is how they decide the rec board in this state is going to be going to function. And they just happen, am I right? They just happen to give the mill to the school to disperse it. But it is not a shell game. I really, truly think that is not the way it should be looked at.
And we do not receive the money at all. It goes straight to the rec board. We do not.
So would it help, Madam Chair, if we sat with administration next year and we kind of outlined some of the benefits for each one of the buildings and the schools with some of this information?
But Charles, you have to remember, it's not for the schools. The school is, I'll use Connie's word, they're the vehicle. This is not a mill for the school. The school is able to appropriate the mill. It's for the community. It's not for our community. It's also for the KC community.
Absolutely.
It is for recreation for every age of kid. And you take the Boys and Girls Club, I think they got $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 that you guys allotted to them last year. They're not a standalone entity. And, Scott Musselman, when he took over, had like 20 kids. Now they're up to about 100. It's huge. And I don't think that the kids that go there, families can afford to pay for that to keep that open. But it's a great asset for this community.
And Dave, I'm not going against it. I'm just saying that's the questions I'm hearing from you as a board. If you want to know what's happening, if you'd have heard my comment at the Wednesday work session, that's what I talked about. It was an extended day. So what I'm hearing from you as a board of trustees is you have a question, how is it impacting kids? If you need me as a superintendent to find that information, I will. But I'm just trying to help.
That's what... But
That was my overall problem, was this is not about the kids, i.e. Johnson County School District. This is about the community. And I get that. And so that's where I call it a shell game, is we're taking tax money and we're shuffling it over here.
We are. The school district is not. The school district is not.
We shouldn't have anything to do with it.
The city, county, and school districts are the ones that get to take this mill, because the county couldn't do it because they don't have all their mills.
So because they've used up all their tax money, they're going to have us tax the community for their projects. That's what you're saying.
But honestly, Randy, let's just say that the school said, you know, we're not going to levy this mill. And I wish Bridget was here. I don't know that you can get rid of it. I think that the county or city may be able to take it over and levy it through themselves rather than through the school.
Well, being that there's no public comment, maybe we should move past the public hearing.
So, well, we had a hearing, and I feel like everybody everybody had their say. So, we have the. Would you please review the mill levy intent that we want to
have? Yeah. So, I created an intent to levy resolution, and I've got two versions. The first version is, whereas on the 12th day of June 2023, the Board of Trustees of Johnson County School District Number 1 approved an intent to levy mills for the Johnson County Recreation District and the Sheridan Johnson Boches for the fiscal year ending June 30, 24. The other version is to approve the levies for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2024, and June 30th, 2025. Whereas the notice of the such levy was published in the newspaper, a hearing was held, and so therefore it be resolved that the Board of Trustees of Johnson County District Number 1, that such an intent to levy is hereby approved and is in effect for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2024. Or the other version is 2024 and June 30th, 2025. At Wednesday's...
And that would be only one time that we would do to the 25, and that is because the way now the legislature is getting the revenue. Am I right?
Correct. It's the way that... so now the companies are required to pay monthly, and so they're paying that monthly. But part of it is a deferred revenue because it's not levied on a certain time. So property tax collected from July of 22 to December of 22 for the 22 mineral production are also recognized as deferred revenue in the fiscal year June 30, 2023. Property tax collected from January of 2023 to June 23 is levied in August of 24 for the FY25. So they're sitting on money that they've received from January to June that really is deferred revenue. So it's really not theirs until the next time that's levied. So this way, the money they have can be spent because we've approved 2 years in a row. So every 2 years we would approve levies, not just this one time. It would be every 2 years.
But every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we would not do this next year, but we would do it the following year.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Yes.
So that we would not have a hearing then every year. Correct.
Correct.
Every 2 years.
Yeah, if we went with that resolution to do it for 2 years.
Okay. We will not be voting on this until we get to the action items. And I think that's all. Clear. May I have a motion to adjourn from the mill levy hearing?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor of adjourning from the mill levy hearing signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, we're now down to general reports. Mr. Oski.
All right.
And by the way, let's back up. That's the first time we've done this, the hearing, and I really appreciate you coming out with your comments. And again, we can agree to disagree and keep moving forward. So thank you.
So with that, Madam Chair, is there any questions? I would like Mr. Mader. He is here. He has a spring activities report. I thought it was well done. Ryan, Do you have anything you would add to that report here this evening?
No, I'd just like to highlight the end-of-year celebrations. Our spring teams had a great year, both activities and athletics, with the regional championship for girls track, and our girls soccer was third at state. More importantly, on my side, one thing I like to celebrate towards the end of the year is our academic all-conference that I listed there. We had 6 student-athletes there, that criteria I shared in there, so the GPA, the ACT, which is kind of a factor, which eliminates a lot of kids from that. But still proud of the fact, as we go to our May meeting as ADs, and we put our kids up for that nomination to meet the criteria, year in and year out, Buffalo High School leads our conference in most kids, which is a pretty proud factor to have. We had some kids make some all-star games this summer. One of those, Cantrell Rosales, played last weekend in the Wyoming-Montana all-star basketball game. You'll see her name in there quite a bit for the Basketball Coaches Association and the soccer. And we had 2 boys, Mike Lynott and Blake Bell, play in the Shrine Bowl this last weekend as well for the North. And so super cool. In addition, 4 kids will be going on to compete in athletics next year at the college level. We had signings for them this year, kind of a short media day at the high school, which is exciting for those guys, and just some public relations out there for that. So any questions?
I would like to say the people don't understand how difficult the academic all-conferences are for athletes. You have to have a 25 on your ACT, and that gets a lot. In some years, we do not have very many. And I was also impressed with how many athletes were out for 3 sports for 4 years. That's quite a commitment. So, well done. And I also like what you did at the awards, where you had everybody stand up and you read off their who was involved, and I would say, 95% of the student body was standing at the end?
Yeah. So I'm putting together for, I'd like to submit a July board report, similar to what I've done in the past with activity involvement and correlation to GPAs and ACT scores, as well as our year-end participation numbers from the entire year. So please look forward to that in July.
May I ask how many kids are in your summer program right now?
Our first week, we had 80, 7 through 12.
It's 7 through 12. Good.
7 through 12, yeah. We actually have a lot of middle schoolers, which is exciting and fun, especially for us high school coaches who don't get to work with middle school a lot. And so we went through 2 days of kind of preliminary tests, and then last week was our first official week. We're going Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday mornings. We have 3 sessions at 6, 6:45, and 7:30. We wrap up by about 9 o'clock every day. A handful of about 6 to 8 coaches are there every morning, in both the weight room and down on the track. Our kids got to ring the bell for the first time this morning, so they earned points. They're drafted into 4 teams, 7 through 12. We have our seniors as our team captains. They take attendance themselves, so they get 1 point for attendance those mornings. They also get, use a team builder app, which they keep track of all their lifting and performance for the week. They get a point for inputting all their information weekly into that, kind of a bonus point. And then this morning, those kids that made season best, so that bettered their 10-yard fly we did this morning, for example, that they did on their preliminary a week ago. If they ran faster than that, they got to ring the bell and kind of have that PR and earn extra points. So, a lot of fun.
Brian, do you have any kids come out that are not involved in sports? Because this is, my understanding, open to all.
Open to everybody.
But do you get any of those kids? What do you think?
No. Not usually. No, I mean, it's geared towards, right now we have 3 levels. We went through evaluation of every kid to place them in the right spot for the weight room. If they're not ready for weight and they still need functional movement, we put them in there. So we do have some introductory type things, mostly with our younger kids. And then we have our speed and agility development in the mornings, where they're just working on bigger, faster, stronger.
Any other questions for Brian? Thank you, Ryan,
All right, Madam Chair, we do not have Cloud Peak or Buffalo High School representation, but we do have Clear Creek Middle School. Are there any questions for Brandon?
How many kids do you have in summer school, Brandon?
We have 30 signed up. We're having about 20, between 20 and 25 usually come on an average day so far.
How many teachers are involved?
4. And that kind of allows us to do math, social studies, language arts, and science. So any of the areas where the students need some help, yeah. So it's been good.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Brandon.
Mm-hmm. Lori. You can represent Craig.
Both of us.
It's all the same way.
That could be interesting. So I included, I think, well, the highlight I want to speak to is the data. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been really focused using the FOSS and PNIL program for the last few years and really focusing on comprehension and fluency. And, you know, in the last couple of years, there's been a huge swing nationally to just focusing on science of reading, which is the phonemic awareness and the phonological processing. And we've really tried to find that balance because that's important. But interestingly, in January, as we know, we shifted more of that approach. Not that we stopped putting focus on the FOSS-PNIL comprehension, guided reading, interactive read alouds, but we backed off, if you will, and went strongly in the science of reading approach. Interestingly, if you looked at the data, sorry, I'm sounding just like Dr. Miller.
That's okay.
She's got some of us.
Sweet.
On the benchmarking, we typically in the spring in all three grade areas come into that 85-88% proficiency mark, and we actually dropped in those areas with our benchmarking from Christmas. And what that told me was when you look at the FAST bridge, those scores in reading are pretty phenomenal. Kindergarten ended up at 89% proficient, first grade 70%, and second grade 89%. And we've never had to this date real strong FAST bridge scoring. So it told me that our focus on that phonemic phonics awareness, the science of reading, supported, because that's what FAST bridge tests. And so it is absolutely essential that we find that critical balance between the whole language and the science of reading, which is what it should be. And so I included in your report the our schedule for next year, and it's very intentional. And it hits, I mean, we went through and figured out what's research recommended for time allotments in each of the areas of literacy and math. And we intentionally built the schedule for that. So those are the types that we're going to be operating on much more focused than what, not that we haven't been focused, but it's much more balanced, if you will. And then math, using FAST Bridge again, 92% proficient at kindergarten, 96% proficient at first grade, and 91% at second grade. That's pretty good, if I may say so.
That it is.
Another thing that was exciting, Dr. Miller shared two more pieces of data with me, so thank you for that, just like about an hour ago. And in the FAST Bridge, in second grade, FAST Bridge A reading, which is different, remember, than kindergarten first, because that's a one-to-one early reading assessment. The second grade take it online. 40% of those students are count, according to the test, which I get in second grade. That's a long way from college, but they're predicted to be on a college pathway. 50% are in a low risk in that reading, and 10% are at some or high risk. And then in math, 57% of them are in a college pathway for success, 32% low risk, and 11% at some or high risk. So that, I mean, it's pretty exciting. I think we're doing the right things, but I want to get our literacy back to more of a balanced approach. The last piece, which again wasn't just because I just got it this afternoon, the Y top for me is a bit of a frustration because it's, as you've heard me say, it's 12 questions in ELA at the end of the year and 12 questions in math. So in perspective, if they have one geometry question on a math assessment and the bird hits the window or they just flat miss it, you know, it can really change their score. The other way is how the state scores them. ELA is scored, you may have, for example, a Venn diagram question on a reading part of that, and there could be, you know, you could have six or seven option of answers in there of, like, a Venn diagram is different, similar, and they could miss one of those and miss the entire problem. Math, on the other hand, you could have three components to the answer. They might miss one, but they'll give them credit for part of the answer. So it's not even, if that makes sense, scored equitably, if you will. But last year we had 20% in math hit proficiency, and this year we had 32%. No, I'm looking at different papers. 50% hit proficiency in math. So we had a 30% gain there, and then in ELA we had 32% were proficient last year, and this year we had 57%, so they had 25% gain. So if you don't like the test, it does show that we're making progress. So anyway, beyond awesome. The questions.
Thank you for the data. How long did they get to take these tests? I mean, segment. Answer the 12
they're
questions.
They're not timed.
Well, they're not timed. Good.
Yeah. There's components of FastBridge that are, but they're pretty generous. So,
but attention span, it's got to be.
70.
I wouldn't have an attention span like that. I'd be looking at the bird that hit the window.
Okay. Which happens. Or the test doesn't cooperate, especially in Y-top. It's a really picky little test at second grade. Sometimes it can get it to work, and sometimes it doesn't.
So. Summer school?
Going well. We have 3 teachers and 1 para. We had 25 that were agreeing to come, and of those, we've had an average of 18 to 21 showing. So we're doing theme-based. Last week was space. This week is ocean pirate theme, so they're bringing some fun into their learning and doing a lot of reading, writing, and math in science. So.
Any questions? Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, KC, Jake.
Mr. Evans. So you took the kids down to the University of Wyoming, if I remember, and you also took them to the trade school?
Yes, we went to WyoTech as well as University of Wyoming. There was rotations at the University of Wyoming to see different segments.
I'm tickled you did that. I really like seeing that. Was it a benefit for the kids to help them make their minds?
It was.
Do you take juniors and seniors or just seniors?
We took 7th through 11th
grade. Oh, awesome.
The goal with that is that over the next 5 years, we're not going to just see the University of Wyoming. We're going to branch out. Next year, we're actually going to go to the Black Hills side and see what we have over towards Black Hills. That is going to include Gillette College and then on out into industry and Black Hills State over there as well.
Yeah, so for me, I'd love to see you keep it in state because of Hathaway, but I'd love to see you take those kids to Torrington, Sheridan, Gillette.
Yep.
Wherever it might happen to be, and I just think that's a great program. I'm glad you implemented the trade school into there because I think more kids lean towards that, so appreciate you doing that.
Yep, that went well. We were expecting less enthusiasm for doing it again next year out of the students because, it was a pretty strenuous day, but there was 85 to 90% saying, yes, I really enjoyed it, this is something I got positive out of it. Kids that maybe weren't so positive going to on the trip came back with a different perspective, and we're looking forward to next year. So that's what we'll do.
Great.
Jake, just a little bit of sideboard. I thought, did I screw up? Your elementary presentation did not come through.
Ah, well, we'll get that up. We'll make sure that link goes.
Sorry, through. I just wanted you to.
Thank
that.
You.
Is Kinder Boost off to it?
Kinder Boost registration will begin right after July 1st. We send out a blast to the parents on the last day of school explaining to parents that please expect a Kinder Boost program starting. The coordinators will be meeting in, I think, late July, first part of August, and be making contact with those families and getting enrolled. We're looking at 6 Kinder-age students being in kindergarten next year, and from what I gather, possibly up to 9 in the Kinder Boost, so that gets us that feeder program to come into kindergarten for us.
Anybody else? Thank you, Mr. Evans. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, guys. Mr. Hanson.
Dr. Hanson, tell us about your grant.
Oh, yeah. So we got a pretty nice grant through the L. Bogan Foundation. And if that name is familiar, they're the same folks that fund the National Board Certification for Teachers, helped with the stipend with that. So it's $210,000 over 3 years. And we're going to use that money to grow the culinary program. Right now, we've got Chef Sam half-time, and so he teaches one class for BHS and one class for New West. So we're going to turn the one class that we're able to offer now into a sequence of three classes, and I'm working with Mr. Evans. He's helping me out so that we get a sequence that's a CTE program that will be for New West and for Buffalo High School. I think the thing that I'm most excited about is the collaborative nature of what we're going to be doing. If you read what I wrote there, we'll be collaborating with Friends Feeding Friends and also the food pantry. So the idea is that our students will be taking food supplies. I say raw food, but then it sounds like we're using raw food. Food supplies and turning those into ready-to-heat or ready-to-eat meals that can then be provided at the food pantry and also be utilized by students in district who could use those. So we just really think that, like all things, students can benefit more when they know that somebody's going to be using the product of their labors. So instead of just, oh, we're going to make whatever today and then we get to eat it ourselves back at school, when they know that it's going to go out to the community, there's a little more riding on it. And we know that there are plenty of jobs in the food industry, both here in Buffalo and Northeast Wyoming, anywhere kids might actually go. So the development of the program should lead to potential certifications that kids can earn as well.
How many students did you have at BHS taking that course? Was there a waiting list?
How many BHS students were in the class? Fewer than 12. Oh. There's only so many. And truly, talking with Chef Sam, really there should only be about 8 kids in the kitchen at a time. You've got big high school kids in the area that used to be the Family Consumer Sciences kitchen there, and you put a couple big kids in those kitchens, it fills up pretty fast. So we're going to try to offer multiple sections over time, keeping that number where it should be so kids can learn as much as possible. This first year of it, just so everybody knows, it's going to be a building year. We're going to take our time, develop the curriculum, Chef Sam and I together, make sure we've got something really good for the, so this year's a 23-24 year, so for 24-25 will be the first year that we have the full development of the sequence of classes.
Mr. Hanson, do you have the equipment that you need, or will this grant?
We've got some pretty good equipment, a lot of which came from the culinary program at Sheridan College. But there's money written into this grant to improve what we have as well. And some of that will come. One of the certifications is the ProStart certification, which is really a cool class and certification. It's through the Restaurants Association nationwide. It's recognized anywhere. So once we kind of get that going, we'll have a better idea of what we can purchase most efficiently teach that class and help those kids get that certification as well. That's going to be really cool because it's competitive. Kids get to travel and go compete against other classes of culinary students. So
when we signed a contract with Bonner Mountain to start this, they did put in new ovens. They committed to a certain amount of money if we did a 3-year lease with them. So that's what we're doing through COVID funds to help support the kickstart. And now Mike's grant's going to kick it off even further. So
$70,000 a year is pretty good amount of money for 8 to 12 kids for the culinary program.
Well, hopefully there'll be more kids than that in the program. When you talk about moving a staff member from part-time to full-time, that can eat up dollars pretty quick, too. So
it does cover salaries, you think?
Yes. Yeah, this isn't one that's just equipment and supplies.
Yeah,
it's also salaries.
Sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
On your enrollment, you said you have 33 students at this point that will start the new school year.
Yes.
Is that the max amount of students y'all take right now?
Well,
that maximum seems
I feel like you all ask me that every year. Is that as big? It's about. When the School Facilities Commission came through, they said we were about at 90% of our maximum for the space.
They're wrong.
it's so what does that mean exactly, right? We're really close, Jody. Our whole thing is we just want to make sure every district area kid is in the best school for them. And so it does lead to some kind of tough conversations about, you know, we don't have room now, so maybe it's no for now, but apply again in a semester after we have some kids graduate and as room becomes available. So, but yeah, we had, I think, as I said, about twice as many applications as we had spots.
You had like 20 applications or something?
Yes, ma'am, 21, I believe.
Well, the exit interview said you have been killing it. Everybody loved the school. They were thrilled. Did not know if they would have made it without. So that's an attaboy to the team because, boy, the students think you guys are right on top of it.
That's, you know, we've got two goals. One of them is to provide an alternative pathway to graduation, and the other one is for them to essentially enjoy getting there. And that second part actually is what drives the first thing. So so long as they know that they've got a crew rooting for them, they're going to do pretty well.
Perform
with
it. Yeah.
Anybody
else?
Thank you.
All right, Madam Chair, we're on to director's reports. Facilities, John. He's a busy man.
Do you have a crisis of the month for us this round?
No.
Oh, good.
Now that you say that.
Madam Chair, John, explain that the, so you said the district was going to get back $6,000 for the playground that needed repairs.
Correct.
Okay. Are they going to come repair it?
No. They did come repair it and failed.
They're going to come repair it again? No.
It's beyond repair.
So what are you going
to
do?
I've asked KLNA engineers to come give me a price quote to look at engineering that playground. The ground underneath it is gone.
What?
It's heaved up, the sand, there's no drainage, the drainage is incorrect, the concrete's even. It's blowing up. And anytime you'd like to, I can take you guys over there and show you the playground. It failed. And Summit Gradual has been great from day one when it started to fail on offering that refund of $6,000 and trying to come back to fix it. Basically, you're putting a Band-Aid on it.
Well, and that was going to be my question. Is $6,000 enough? Because wasn't that like a $200,000-something?
That was just put a cap on a quarter inch cap.
So
this is going to go upwards of half a million.
So my question is $6,000 enough to cover?
No.
I guess, no.
No, we're going to get our money back that we paid as a district through our major maintenance funds.
Understand that.
It failed, so we're getting our money back because it failed. Summit stand behind and give us. We tried working it, and they couldn't get here before school started last year. Anytime you guys would like to go take a look at that, it is, in the wintertime, it's the most impressive. It just rolls.
So, John, your engineers will come in. What do you got to do? Dig it up, put some gravel under there. You got to put some French drains. What do you need to do there? You got to get the frost
system out. And let the engineers and professionals. That's porous. That's above my pay grade. Let them figure out how they're going to get the water out of there and maintain our investment. Let them put their name on it. I, as a facility director, don't want to waste dollars. I want to have it done and have it done right. If you look at the playground at Meadowark Elementary, the surface of that versus the surface, and look at the technology and how it's changed over the years. There's newer, better stuff. So, and in the climate we live in, winter's hard on everything. We're also going to possibly look at it. Talk to Mr. Anderson about it. We have a play structure out there in the wintertime. It is in the shade all winter.
So it's frozen.
And when the new surface goes in, something that's been done when I started here, that we put snow removal equipment on it. It's not intended for snow removal equipment. So we're looking at possibly moving that play structure to the sunny side so it can thaw and keep the slips and trips for the kiddos.
The good news is you haven't had to turn the irrigation on too much. You shouldn't have had to.
But they're mowing like crazy.
Well, we're just getting all the brakes fixed, Dave, to where we can turn it on. Winter was a little hard on it.
So,
John, I hate to ask, were they not blown out properly?
I was blown out. We had a section of the ground that it pinched it so hard it broke that pipe. It is
so they used thin.
They used all thin wall.
So my hope would be, as you guys replace some of this stuff, I hope you put some poly in there rather than PVC.
No, we do not have the tools for poly. We don't have polyfusing equipment. That's another investment.
Well, you can go down. You can go downtown and rent it. It's not hard.
Again, that's dollars I don't have budgeted for renting poly every time we have a break.
But deal with poly is once you put it in, you've got
reduces the shear force a lot when you get that frosty.
Yeah. Yep. But what we do put in the ground is we give it a thick wall.
Thick wall.
So. Well, I trust Mr. Zink. He'll do what's best.
Yep.
Thank you.
And demolition is going on, so anyone would like to see anything?
Those are some gnarly pictures.
Thank you, John.
Anything else?
No, thank you.
The last picture, John, what is that of? Is that, you got a Kubota pulling
That's our new top dresser.
What does that mean? Is that a fertilizer?
Nope.
No. Applied fertilizer?
We put sand in it, sand. Or compost, and we're able to level the field. It puts a level coat of sand out there. So what we do is we went in, fertilized, did all that, mowed it, overseeded the field, and then we went in with sand over top of it. What it does is try to fill in any low spots, ankle breakers, stuff like that. So it's a pretty sweet little tool.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Before the district had was a manure spreader. But it worked great at the ranch. Runs out real quick and wasn't effective. This is actually made for materials for top dressing athletic fields.
Gotcha.
Did you take it to KC and do the same thing down there?
We will be taking it. We just got it. The district, I don't know if I talked about this last month, we have, and Mr. Mader, we met with Scott, I can't remember his last name, what is it? Neely. He's the owner of the 41 Ranch and CWC pit out there. We've come to an agreement where he wants to help the school district out with material out of their gravel pit. So I threw a budget number at him of $4,000, and he's matching $4,000 for material.
Good.
And just wants sponsorship and what Mr. Mader agreed to, and he wants to continue the relationship with the school district. He doesn't even have kids in our district.
Yeah, so thanks to Wade Taylor. I'm sure Wade was instrumental in getting that set up. So.
Yeah, and the big thing, we trucked it with our little four-yard dump truck just enough to the VHS field to try it out. We're trying to line out some trucking. And waiting until the next fiscal year opens up so we can spend money. Okay.
No more spending. Well, I will tell you this, like I said, where the fields are now as opposed to 3 years ago, there's no conversions.
Yeah, and the sod that's being cut out at Metal Arc Field for the irrigation repairs there, because that's all it. That wire's all patched together. We got three zones hooked together. It just is old. Putting in new valves. Anyway, we're cutting the sod out of there. And you see on the Buffalo High School athletic field where the brown spots were on the edge from all the ice burn, and it just killed it. We're cutting all that out and putting that sod from Metal Arc in there. Because there's a contract that's going to put new sod back on.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Oski.
All right. Nutritional services. Ricky.
Ricky had a busy year. We talked a little bit before, and I noticed our numbers, for instance, in February of 2022, we did over right at 14,000 lunches. And then February 23, we were at 10,000.
Yes.
540.
I would just say it's largely due to the fact that meals are no longer free. So.
Are these kids not buying a lunch then, and they're not eating? Or
hopefully they're bringing it from home or bringing something from home. I mean, being at the elementary school, I've not seen any kids not eat. I don't think at Metal Arc and Clear Creek in high school, they don't eat, or they go out, or they go home. Clear Creek probably not go home. They buy the heck out of all a cart. I should have put it in there. We spent about $11,000 on a la carte items and made in profit about $30,000 just on the snacks and stuff that they could buy. So
very few that they'll eat.
Yeah.
Very few.
So high school, I'm hoping that when they leave, they go get something or going home or something like that. But that's what I would say. It's largely due to. I started making phone calls today for all students with negative balances. I think I got through about 15 this afternoon before I had to leave, and they're all saying, okay, yep, I'll get it in, I'll make payment online. Some of them gave me card information over the phone, so I processed those. They're all, so far, willing, but we have about $7,400 in debt still, so working on that.
Any other questions, Madam Chair? So, Ricky, you're doing your diligence in getting those negative balances, and we haven't seen those for a couple of years. What happens when we start a new fiscal year and we don't have those balances paid? Like, what do we
do? It rolls over into the next year. We do have some donations that we still need to apply, but hopefully, some.
So how long, I know we had discussed earlier about
We make a transfer from general fund to lunch, and part of that would be bad debt. So if we move $150,000 to the nutrition program, part of that will journal entry that as covering the bad debt, because she can't carry bad debt from the year.
So we had a discussion on unpaid balances that we were going to.
And they've been working really hard. Principals are making those phone calls, calling.
Principals are calling.
I guess all we can do is phone calls, but it's, and I understand it. I get it. I just, of how many, progressively, we look projectually, how many years can we sustain this?
Well, I think.
And kids have to eat. Right. If you don't feed kids, you're not going to get anything else. So I'm in total agreement. I just was questioning what we do.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think, didn't we create a policy where we were turning them over to collection agency?
There is, and we revised that this year. I don't remember what the amount was
It cost way more than $7,400 to get
$7,400
back.
Yes.
But it was on an individual basis, wasn't it? $500 once you got in or something. Yeah.
We pushed it up.
Oh, you pushed it up. Mm-hmm.
No, we pushed it up too.
Madam Chair, Ricky, I don't know if I saw this in your report or not, and I did tell you this on the sidelines, but for everyone else, Ricky sent out the survey for the lunches, and for those who don't have kids, thank you.
Yes.
Oh,
I hope you that guys. That's
and yeah. Hooray to you for feeding kids all year. I think that's awesome. It's a job I couldn't do, so thank you so much.
We did get some good feedback. There's probably 5, 6, 7 maybe items that I'll pull from the menu just because I went from if 70% or more of the kids liked it or kind of liked it, then I'm going to probably keep it. And then if less than that, then we're going to get rid of it. So, yeah.
Anyone else? Thank you, Ricky.
Appreciate it.
Okay, technology. Christy.
Anything you'd like to highlight for us, Christy, or
just rocking and rolling? Summer.
Busy season.
Madam Chair, just a comment to you is the number of repairs you're doing is significantly less than they used to be.
I think so.
Yeah, it is, of course, when Cameron was here, way less. And so I don't know if that means the kids are taking better care of stuff, but anyhow, I'm glad to see that.
COVID probably did a number on it, didn't it? On the machines?
Yeah, we had a lot of repairs.
Because they had them with them 24/7.
Well, I saw your numbers, and I'm pretty sure all three of my children were in more than three of these categories. So
we still have high school repairs to do, too.
Oh.
All right. Transportation.
Madam Chair, so Phil, I read your report, and I'm trying to find it here, that we had a driver who we guaranteed some hours to, but then we took the hours away.
Okay, so what we've done there is we have not taken those hours away from those drivers. We've rephrased that. It used to be you would guarantee a couple hours to drive in the morning. If your route was only an hour and a half, we would guarantee you got 2 hours. We're still allowing those drivers to have those hours. However, we have to work them during that time. So we're asking them to come in and do other duties, such as clean on their buses and things like that. So some of the drivers are in a little bit of a disturbance with the way that's phrased, because they're coming off of what's considered guaranteed time to actually having to be there and work for those hours. We could probably work most of our drivers, any of them, up to 30 hours a week. Then we would have the benefit of working them into, you know, the benefit packages as well. It's just a matter of they will have to come in and actually be present and working during those times. So,
okay. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. I like to report the good, the bad, the ugly.
And, you know, and thank your mechanics and yourself for stepping up driving the buses when you didn't have anybody to do it.
Yeah, we had, especially the mechanics, you know, that was a piece that they weren't hired for, but they are credentialed, and we utilize them extensively. Even on activity trips, you know, out of town, mechanics were leaving and taking activity trips, a lot of shuttling here in town. So kudos to them. I really appreciate their effort.
Tell them about our plan.
Yeah. Okay, so Mr. Oski and I, we're going to go pretty much worldwide with this. What we want to do is we're going to start doing some recruitment events. Maybe bring the radio stations in, have an open house up at the bus barn, maybe some mass media, send out something through the school district, thrill share program to all, you know, all the students, the staff, and everybody, so to help us as a recruitment piece. I think that if the community could understand the dire straits we're in with not being able to get transportation help, I think they would understand more of where we're at, and we would be able to maybe get some of those pieces in place. You know, Mr. Mayor, we really appreciate their students and the successes they have, but we're at the point where we may have to use some of those activity drivers just to get them to school. And those hours may be eaten up. Where, you know, I hate to be this guy, and I hate to say this, but maybe the football team doesn't get to go this week because we had to use all the drivers to get them to school. And we're at that point. We've seen this sand slowly coming out of this hourglass. We've talked about this. We're beating a dead horse over it. It's nationwide. It's not just here in Wyoming, and it's across all industries. But the recruitment, we need to work on that piece. We need to let Johnson County know that we are in dire straits when it comes to transportation and drivers. Our creativity, such as using the mechanics and myself, starting to utilize more of the Suburbans and getting some of the staff members that don't have CDLs to take some of those kids around. Those are only Band-Aids. We really need full certified CDL holding drivers that are committed to come and drive for us and get up and down the road. So I think if the community understands that, I think if they understand the opportunities that we have, especially the fact that we're willing to work them all the way up into a benefit package, these are not just little 1-2 hour gigs anymore. We have lots of work that can be done, and we can find other things that we can do, maybe work dual roles, you know, with other departments, whether it be janitorial or paras, and things like that. I just hope that we can recruit and get some new faces. We're not at the end of our rope yet, but it does take about 6 weeks, 4 to 5, if you're really on it, to come in and get a new CDL and get trained and get going on that. So with that being said, you know, the clock is ticking. So we're going to do some fun things. We've made some improvements up at the bus barn. And there's some things in our mechanic shop that we'd like to show off, so we're going to do some open houses, maybe have some barbecue, and do some of those things to get the people there you know, maybe we can invite the radio station down. You guys have all heard that on the radio when you're traveling. Hey, we're down here at Ed's Used Car Sales, and we're having hot dogs. Come stop in and see us. We want to do that with our bus barn and let, you know, maybe the littles come in and go through the buses and see what that's like, and we can offer some bus rides for them as well and just show off what we have. Because I did have the opportunity the other day to take the State Facilities Commission around Northeast Wyoming and got to see what some of the other school districts have, particularly Campbell County. We toured their transportation department, and we have a really nice facility, comparatively speaking, to one of what we consider richer transportation departments. We've got a really nice facility, and I think we need to see it, and I think we've got an excellent staff, and I want our community to be able to come in and see the culture that we have, and that may bring them to the table where, hey, Grandpa, maybe you should start driving the bus a little bit more, or, hey, I could do this and, you know, as well as deliver pizzas or whatever it may be. So, but I want to end, you know, my comments with the fact that we are at that point where we have to do something, or we're going to have to send four buses in four directions, north, east, south, and west, and everybody's going to have to come meet us, because we're not able to access everybody's front door at this point because we don't have the staff for it. So hopefully we can turn that all around.
Mr. McKenzie, in all my years of living here, I've never been to the bus barn, so I'd be super excited to come see what kind of facility you have. I guess my question is, and I know I feel like we kind of talked about this when I was first on the board 3 years ago, but is there something we as a district do to support people that don't have a CDL coming in? Is there something that we do to support them to get their CDL?
Of course.
Okay.
Mainly, we pay them to get their CDL. So we have paid training available right now. So from the moment that you come on and you pass the background checks, uh-huh, and we hire you, we, as soon as you start watching videos and we start training you, we're paying you that bus driver wage to get that CDL.
I didn't know.
So here's the problem to that. So we're also creating a document. We train them, and then they go get a $10 more an hour job.
Yeah.
So part of that training is they have to stay with the district.
Stay with the district.
Before they get the money.
No, they get trained. They're getting paid and get trained, and then the day they get their certification, they're gone. They don't come back and drive.
So we need to have a commitment letter for at least a year.
So one of the things that Bridget, and I know it's been a while, but one of the things that Bridget and Amanda helped with is we do have a draft document that if we hire people, there's a commitment letter. Yeah.
Also, we talked about the, when you had said that you have enough work to give people 30 hours a week so that they could qualify for a benefits package. I mean, I think we had discussion on that. We had Connie look into that with the insurance of where we would need to be with that. And so, I mean, just letting people know that piece, because, I mean, while you can't eat benefits every month, we sure need them. People sure need them. And I'm excited. I think it's a great thing that you guys our driving force to get some new bus drivers, and I'll share any information I can.
So I've asked Bill to get out a bus so people can actually sit. They can't drive it until they're certified, but maybe they can sit behind the wheel and pretend to see what it looks like, get bus rides, get the radio station up there, get the board there. But probably the best way to start advertising is getting out to parents and letting them know what it is, but to do some open houses.
Okay, principals, those will be your other assigned duties.
In addition to your other duties.
I have one more question. So, Bill, when I know we're short and all the things, but, like, in your best world of worlds, like, how many are you talking? I have no idea exactly how many routes there are. And so when you're in the midst of football season and volleyball going on and you have your regular routes, like, what are you looking at? Because as a community member, I'm not 100% sure physically what you need. I know what you need, but I don't know.
So Dr. Miller enjoys data, so I piled, this is the drivers we had from 2018 to today. And it shows both KC activity substitutes as well as route drivers. Yeah,
he's in my office still.
So as you can see, COVID did put a spin on everything, including transportation. As you can see, we flopped. We went from 8 drivers this last year with 4 substitute drivers and 2 activity drivers. We now have 4 route drivers that are going to be coming back. One of those is a special needs driver. And then we have 8 of them that have committed. So everybody who has left us currently this year that is still able to drive, that they didn't take retirement because of a medical reason, has said they will come back and be a substitute driver. They just can't commit their life to daily driving. So we've kept them kept their toe in the water, because that's how we were successful last year. Is as you guys saw, we had several of our substitute drivers that were almost getting full-time status as a substitute. So we were utilizing a lot of those. I'm pleased to announce that KC hasn't had too much of a rollover. They're looking really well down there. However, I would point out to you the 3 sub-drivers in KC are actually teachers or other facility people that we have to work with Mr. Evans to cover their schedules to be able to use them as a transportation piece. And sometimes he's magically done that for us. And he said, hey, I'll get someone in there so she can come drive or he can come drive. And we appreciate that a lot, Mr. Evans. But that is something to look into, is those drivers are not outside waiting. They are actually in that school and have other duties. So I don't know if those numbers help you with your answer, but that's where we're at. Is we would love to just see that. Our activity drivers, it's very popular. That one will fill before a route driver position will. Because there is that full-time status, and it's quite a commitment, though, to become an activity driver, because, as you well know, with the cancellations and the scheduling and the different things around the state, sometimes you're not home for 2 weeks, and sometimes you're home for the week, and you don't have anything to do that week. So we use them, obviously. I've brought in my activity drivers. I've been covering my mechanics because my mechanics were driving type of thing, just because the schedule works. So the beauty of it, though, is everybody that works for us up there, the culture that we have is everybody's got each other's back, and it's been really, really neat to take on this position. You know, I've been here for only 5 months as a transportation director, and I can count on every one of my team members, and that's really nice to say.
So, Bill, what I'm happy to see is you just flip-flop some numbers. You know, you still got the drivers. You just don't have the route drivers, but you have the subs to fill in.
So right. There's some movement internally. We've done a lot of negotiation to keep them on board and to keep them in the system. Because, as you know, as soon as we sever that tie, then we have to go back through background checks. We have to go through drug inquiries. We have to go back through that whole system again, which puts us out quite a ways. And we want to keep them on the system and keep them going because we need to use them.
Christy, did that knock us offline? Okay.
No, but it's shaking. My video board is shaking. Christy, is that out of my bipolar?
We're trying, God. We'll get higher.
There it goes again.
All right, Ms.
Dr.
Brosky.
Miller, hang on over there.
Thank you. Good.
All right, superintendent's report. So with that, I just want to go over some real big highlights. I'm going to start out with the PLC Institute. I don't want to take that away from Steve. It'll go into some of that, but that was fascinating to see what we were able to do in an eight-hour period to switch things over on the first day, and then the work that happened among the schools and some of the feedback. So kudos to everybody that put in a lot of effort with that, but the big one is to Dr. Miller sitting right over there. So kudos to him with his efforts as we did with that. You heard Bill talk about the world tour, and that was fascinating. It made me realize through that touring piece that We have some pretty nice facilities in Johnson County. If you were aware, not only with the hospital, but with what was happening with the state facilities meeting on Thursday and Friday, there were cars parked everywhere outside. It was a pretty heated conversation on the first day. With the transition, they came out with the new rating scales of where schools come in, and we have a hill to climb. So, for example, Metal Ark, Clear Creek is above Metal Ark now on the rating scale of being replaced. There are some other big things. People went from number 4 to 159. So there were some pretty big challenges that came out of that. So there, we're kind of in that transition of what that looks like for us. So people are trying to understand. It was very heated out in the lobby out here a couple times. But the reality is the state is adopting a new way of rating schools and facilities and how we get to that point. So even in talking with Mr. Zink, now it's time to start, now that the new process is in place, is for us to start putting component projects out and what that time frame looks like, and then looking at what buildings or how we can pursue the capital construction portion of things. So that is out on the table. But, Bill, thank you to your driving. We had to take some opportunities to see some other places. But the reality is, I can say we honestly built some pretty strong relationships with some of the SFC people. And I will agree with Bill, when we seen the facility at Campbell County, the Transportation Department, we have a lot to be grateful for. They have over 60 buses that they cannot house that are parked within the community or outside because they don't have a place to work or to work on them. They literally have just basically two bays to fix. Almost 190 buses, two bays inside, two bays outside, so a lot of work is done inside and out. Part of their roofing has settled over 12 inches on one corner in the last year. Campbell County High School has sewer problems to the point where if you're on the first floor, you don't want to be on the first floor when somebody flushes the toilet because it might flood the first floor. So anyway, they have a tree growing on a roof. We learned that. So when we take a look at what Mr. Zink and what previous people have done to maintain our facilities, we do have some pretty nice facilities. So I believe it was a team effort. Mr. Zink's team showed off our robot, which, by the way, they thought was fascinating. Mr. Hansen put a wonderful brochure together, which I had a great conversation with a gentleman all the way to Gillette about New West. So those were good things that happened on that Wednesday. But we left here at 8 o'clock, and what time did we return? 4:30. So a really nice thank you card for all of us in town here. Made some connections. Now we're done with the State's Facilities Commission. Now we're going to do the State Board of Education here this week. So we are presenting at 11:30. We got that information today. It's better than one day before. It's a couple days before. We will be presenting. Johnson County has a highlight opportunity since they're here, so we're going to present at 11:30 on Thursday if any of the board members want to come see that. But again, I will remind you, it is a state meeting, so I would not be surprised if there's a lot of vehicles parked outside for a couple days as they prepare for that. We're going to do Jeb and Roy. We're going to do parent liaison. We're going to do sources of strength. We're going to do the Dr. Miller's videos, and we're going to do some of the student videos. So that's, and then just kind of a quick update of what we're doing in Johnson County. So there'll be a 30-minute window there that we're presenting on that. So with that, knowing the time frame, are there any other questions for me as a Board of Trustees?
Okay, let's move on.
All right, curriculum and learning. Any questions for Dr. Miller?
Do we get white top data? Do you give us that? Or?
Not yet. We've given them out to the principals so they can plan for the fall, but it's not public information yet.
Oh, it's not public. Okay. We give you the secret handshake? Or
Jan, if I may speak, the only reason I could share second grade is because it's not in the third through 10th grade.
Right. Gotcha.
It's not top secret.
Thank you. Any other questions?
All right, special services.
Are you going to talk about the co-teaching? That's something that's different that we're doing?
No, we've been doing co-teaching for some time. It's extremely strong in the elementary and both elementaries. But what we always have a shortage of paraprofessionals, and so we approached it as I've had better luck finding teachers than I have been able to find paras. And so we talked about how we can be more effective by having a co-taught classroom at least in every grade level, and I think we are there finally. Even pre-K will have a special ed teacher, and so then we can meet those children's We can meet those students' needs with a teacher instead of, you know, three or four paraprofessionals.
Okay.
And as you can see from my I can't talk today to save my life. The number of people that I was able to hire, let's put it that way, you'll see quite a few new positions. And so we have been able to get not only a C teacher in each building, where before they were shared between buildings, we now have more of those co-taught classrooms. So that's where some of the new came from. Instead of hiring, we had, I want to say, six or seven open paraprofessional positions. Instead of hiring so many paras, I was then able to hire teachers instead. Thank you. So, and we've been very, very fortunate.
Going to the C's program, what are our commitments to those individually? Try to put somebody in lunch.
Yep. So in the C, when the person came to give us some guidance on how to make our C program stronger, that was the first suggestion, was that we have somebody available in each building. It's really hard for a teacher that's having students struggling in both buildings, who gets the teacher. And so that was one of their suggestions. We also brought well-managed schools, or you've probably heard it as Boys Town training. We brought them back in. They're here in my office all week. All of our C teachers, I think, except for one, we had prior commitment with the basketball camp, but they were all able to attend, and so they have been able to work together with an amazing team of trainers that have come to help us make those programs stronger.
Did you have anything else you wanted to highlight?
I'm just excited to fill those positions.
I know.
I mean, to have, I can't tell you enough, like, when I post special ed positions, I always look at the state website, and there are between 50 and 60 open special ed positions always. And so when we opened up Frontline and there were, you know, 8 or 9 applicants, that's huge. And speaks very highly for this district. I even had one of our teachers is coming from Campbell County. We've had people come from districts that are bigger, that pay more, but they want to be here with us, and so that's super exciting for me. So that was probably the highlight of my month. And then well-managed schools. We're pretty lucky to be able to have them here. So.
Any questions? Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, just real quick, too, one of the things that is going to ramp up in Val's world is federal grant applications along with all of ours. So, unfortunately, we can spread the wealth among some of us in some of these other categories, but Val and her team take on one of the bigger grants, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's still not open today?
No.
Okay. So typically that's due July 1st. It's one of the bigger grants that has to be written and applied for, so hopefully there'll be an extension to that. But I think Val and her team needs to be kudos for the last 2 years. The rest of us, I've spread that wealth among some of us. Dr. Hansen has officially been requested to be in the system for next year, but that is definitely something that her staff takes on, and she does most of the work, so I do appreciate that piece of it. Okay. All right, business report. Connie, you're up.
Anything you'd like to go through?
Well, I want to, we're in the middle of a blitz audit, another audit on top of another audit, but it's a blitz audit, so every district in the state is getting a blitz audit, and it was at risk, and ELL students, and I just want to commend, whatever your name is, Ricky, stepping on that button that I can't think of their name, Ricky, she had a list of 75 kids she had to report on, and I think there's down to maybe one or two exceptions that we can't find on the paperwork for, so it was really a good thing. And the same with ELL. She had 75 students that she had to find and look up and get all up to them. And she's put together a pretty cool system. She's got a tracker that's got links and things that she can just share with them. So it was really good. So I just want to, they did a lot of hard work and nothing that I could have done on that, so they could do that. We're still in a holding pattern to get the final 100 so that we can get an idea of what our revenue are. We're still just in the holding pattern. And
is everybody in the holding pattern?
Yep.
Yes. I like this federal grant.
So they said why?
I'm sorry, what?
Why?
Due to the change in the funding model.
Oh, okay.
They're right. Also working, waiting on the school facilities department to get their numbers in, and the personnel numbers aren't quite ready there either. Remember, our ABM actually went down, so we lost FTEs, and that really generates funding. So because we got an ECA, that helps putting that funding up a little bit. And then special ed is going to be a little bit higher, and that reimbursement's that they're separating that out. So it's just kind of a holding pattern. Had great conversations with the state. He was here with the School Facilities Commission. He's on the commission, but he stopped and talked to us, and we had some great conversations, and so we're in a pretty good spot. So they're going to let us work through some issues. And
Madam Chair, just comment to your report here, Connie, is I'm glad to see that our local revenue is up $5.5 million. That tells me that our evaluation will go up. We're about $407 million right now. I'll go out on a limb and tell you we'll be close to $500 million next year, which helps everybody out. And going back to your mill levy and stuff, the amount of money that you guys are able to allocate, it will all go up. And it's not because of taxpayers. It's because of the energy development and what they pay. That's why it's going up.
So they were recommending, they were predicting it would be about $409, and I called in the other day, and it's $500.
Oh, it jumped that much. That's awesome. Yep.
So. Any other questions?
And so, like I say, when we had COVID methane development going on, you weren't here, but our revenue, we were almost at $1 billion. Okay. So, that's, we dropped way down. We're slow to get kind of back up.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
We're on
to
the rec board.
Well, I feel like we had a pretty good discussion tonight. Rec board, we did listen to all of the applicants. I don't remember exactly how many, but it was over $600,000 worth of people who applied. We have about, for this year, I think $340,000 award, but we're meeting tomorrow night to do that. We didn't because we were still figuring this system out of what the school board's going to do with it. So that's where we sit.
Madam Chair? Mm-hmm. So when I looked at the rec board, when I looked at the menu to kind of find out just the history, I mean, I know we were given some history at the work session the other night. So they had a year of scheduled meetings. So it's not, do they just, like, schedule them annually? Like, okay, it'll be this
And do they say, so, like, it'll be the third Tuesday of whatever? I mean, like, how do they do that?
So yes. This is when I went to my first meeting, we sat down and we said, okay, these are the days we're going to have the meeting. And usually it is the second Tuesday, and they take... Typically, we do not meet in June, but we are this year. And then I think there's one other month we don't meet. But then it's the second, it's the day after the school board. Are we the second Monday? I should know this by now. So then rec board's Tuesday.
So maybe then when they get that decided, they can update the, maybe just mention whoever's in charge of that website. It is not. It is not updated.
So.
Just because I would like to attend a couple meetings just to see what's going on.
Yeah. I think they've had some issues with that website this year, and I know the guy's been working on it because the forms were not. We had some applicants who applied, and yeah, Mr. Hansen was one, and it somehow got put in 2024, so we didn't even see it. Until he contacted me, and I was like, "Yeah, why are we not getting this one?" And there were several others that got entered wrong as well. So I know Lisa's been working with
somebody's going to work on that
website,
getting it updated, because I think currently all that I could find was 2021.
I did
receive the updated expenditures for 2022, but everything else that I looked, it was 2021, and one of the reports. On the mill, and it went down to the cents. That was Dorothy Elson from 2010. So that's been a minute or so ago. So thank you. If you just pass that on.
Yeah, for sure.
Just to update those things. Thanks, Marcia.
Anything else? BOCES, I think next month will be the big report for there. They've got some big issues they're working on, so... Hopefully next month I'll have more to say. Oh, geez.
We have not had a meeting, so I have nothing to report.
I'd just like to say in the work session, it was brought up that our students have benefited over $200,000 from the Bochis group. I thought that was pretty incredible.
Explain what you mean by that.
Credits from school.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So, yeah. Concurrent dual enrollment.
Right. So, I understand. So.
Yeah. Isn't that what it's for? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's free. I mean, they don't have to pay his college credit that they get. They don't have to pay anything for it.
Right.
But Madam Chair.
At our mill, isn't that about $200,000 every year?
But our students are directly benefiting.
Right. But you're correct, Randy. Yeah. It's last year what the mill was, they got about 200.
And I'm not buying into this one.
Good.
But I do have questions as to whether or not we are actually spending $200,000 on our students for college every year. But that's I'm not going to fight two battles tonight. But
I can tell you that the majority of the money came from Campbell County for the Bochis program. Administrative costs and whatnot, and that's part of the rub as to why they split off.
Madam Chair, can you tell us, is the mill that we levy for the Bochis program, that's the entire funding that the district pays for the continuing ed and dual enrollment?
The half of it.
Half a million, yes, you're right, I misspoke that. But that's what we pay them for the dual enrollment, or do we pay in addition to that for dual enrollment?
I can't answer that, but I think it's just that.
Okay, so we're going down some muddy water here, people. It's not clear as what we're saying here. All right, Wendy explained it. There's the Sheridan College supports up to like 24 credits. There's a whole bunch of things here with the Bochis. So let's talk about the new transition and the old transition. So Campbell County paid. We didn't pay any administrative fees. When we were with Campbell County, the mill went to them and it came back to us as a district. The same with Sheridan One. Okay, that is the commitment that Sheridan College is making right now with the new Johnson Sheridan Bochis is whatever mill, half a mill, let me correct myself, half a mill comes in, it comes back. So Wendy and I, we sit down and we had a conversation because it's been very inconsistent. So, and then we had a conversation at the business office, and there was some inconsistency there on history before Connie and I got here. So the reality is where we set the parameters is that what we talked about, and repeating it, is we're going to set a percentage of every half a mil that goes to support Sheridan College, which is the supporting of the college courses, the building, and all that. And then there's going to be 15% that will be set aside, all right, for concurrent dual enrollment costs that we don't, that are above and beyond. So I'd like the books, the fees, and some of those things, then anything above and beyond 24 credits. So we're always doing that. Those credits that aren't free and do that. So we're going to commit that out of that. And then another 15%, because Bochy's is basically for CTE programs, create some type of application process with that funding for CTE programs. Campbell County had, so we had the table saw kickback, I'll just call it the anti-finger cutter, okay? Basically they funded out of their rec mill for Sheridan 1 and for Johnson County. So we need to make sure Bochy's is also helping support the CTE. But we've never really established a percentage to establish budgets. So I really feel we did that the other day. However, in a sidebar conversation before this meeting, in per Connie's conversation, we need to have a plan B and C. Because there is realistically, the Bochy's and the rec district is unlike the school district. It's separate funding. If all of a sudden the minerals, and this is just hypothetical, I am not saying it's going to fall, the sky is going to fall, but we know we're going to ebb and flow, right? So we just went through a transition where we got a huge increase in our assessed value, so we received more revenue. Okay, there's a day and age where it could be just the same thing. We predict $10 million, and all of a sudden we're getting $1 million. There's no way we're going to pay 70%, and I'm just using fingers, that if the revenue just stops, we got to have a commitment level. We're only paying what we're receiving type of thing, so we don't put ourselves in a bind as a district. Because we are going to start leveraging not only these mills, but our federal funds and things like that to kind of come back to that leveraging our budget in 2025. So we got to make sure we're committing. We had a good conversation about that, but we have to have a plan B if revenues went up this year, our local revenues, which has kind of honestly put us in a pickle because we're right on the edge, so it's a revenue flow. Well, it's the same for Sheridan College, and it's the same for the rec district. Okay, we don't get the money that we're projecting. The state has to pay us back in the fall with what's called the shortfall grant. You don't get it, you don't get it. That's kind of where it is, sorry. That's where we don't get the money. So we're looking at some of those things as we kind of move through that, okay? So I would like Wendy to maybe come back, because it's not as simple as just saying concurrent dual enrollment. It's supporting the nursing programs. It's supporting a lot of things through this ML that supports the whole community with our Bochy's. And Dave's been a part of the board for a long time, right?
Well, not really. I think I've only been there 2 or 3 years. Rich Hall was. Okay. Rich Hall was on there for a long time.
But there's
Wendy, maybe you want to add to it, because I know we have the agreement. It's been written up, and I'll just let you take over if you would.
Madam Chair, if I might, I apologize. I didn't speak during the hearing or whatever, but I appreciate very much the opportunity now. My name is Wendy Smith, and I'm Vice President for Sheridan College, and I get to be involved in our programmatic offerings over here in Johnson County. And, I mean, first and foremost, we're here primarily because of our ability to offer many, many opportunities to high school students. The 200,000, just to go back to that number to help it make a little bit of sense, that has to do with the credits that they earned while in high school and didn't have to pay for it. So I heard Jack Tarter's name mentioned earlier. He's been a longtime advisory board member for us, and he repeatedly calls it the best scholarship out there. You know, if those students can take advantage of that while they're still in high school. And important for you to know, it also statistically statistically increases a student's likelihood of earning that certificate, degree, credential to help them earn more money and live a good life. So there's a direct correlation between higher education and prosperity. So our partnerships are all, I mean, we're in everything with you and making it available to people that are outside of high school as well, adult learners. So it's everything from CNA, you could earn all of the prereqs to enter our nursing program or dental hygiene program right here. You can take other paths within healthcare. You could, you know, become an emergency first responder. The CNA is a way in. We're working to bring medical assistant over here. That might be a hybrid thing. Take most of the classes from the Bonner Mountain Center and then do some clinicals either here or some lab time probably in Sheridan. So there's lots of, you know, back and forth opportunities. The Bonner Mountain Center and the culinary, you know, opportunities are exciting. We can, you know, we're discussing additional credentials there that are available, that are college credentials, even in addition to ProStart that you heard earlier. So there's just a lot of things that are available. And, oh, by the way, you know, hopefully you're proud that you have a higher ed, a college presence in your town and can go to a performance on a Monday night at the library or take a class for fun, your own self, lifelong learning, you know. Live that example that you all set every day. So it's a great partnership. Sheridan College is thankful for the partnership. And, we're just hoping to make that 200,000 number even higher in the future. So I hope that helped, Madam Chair. Thank you for the time.
Madam Chair, Wendy, if I can ask you a question.
Sure.
You used to have a culinary program in Sheridan.
Yeah.
It was up there. What happened there? And was there no interest, and now we have interest?
Well, there was several factors coalesced. I'll start by saying that, because for those of you that remember, in 2020, the college was facing a $4 million deficit annually. And so, unfortunately, after looking at everything on the academic side of the house, the programs that were cut were culinary and hospitality. And primarily our enrollment had been culinary, and the reality is it was decreasing, the interest was waning. The real challenge has to do with, I mean, you know, those students, they learn wonderful skills and the jobs are there, but, you know, we also have to work with our employers and try to get that pay up. But, you know, what has happened is, in, you know, now we're 3 years later, fast forward 3 years, and the state, you know, through their research has said, you know what, hospitality and tourism, we all know, number two in our state, right? So we have actually revamped our curriculum. It's much more of a hospitality, hotel management, event management. There is a culinary aspect, though, to it. So we're bringing back that curriculum, but it looks different. It looks very different if you literally even just look at the names of the courses and kind of what that was. So it's a little bit weird because we got rid of it, but we're bringing it back. I don't know that we'll ever go as far down the culinary road as we did operating a restaurant, things like that, for those of you that remember that we did that. But I could be wrong. You know, never say never, I guess. But we're excited, and we really have a lot of interest at the dual and concurrent level, not just with Johnson County, but with other school districts as well. And it makes sense. It's an employable skill. So, yeah. Hope that answers your question.
It does. And so, Mike, I hope you get to visit with her, because they used to have the kids and
go eat
lunch there and stuff. Maybe you'll have a small program like that, too, where we serve X amount of lunches a day and just get to practice their skills.
Yeah. Sky's the limit.
There you go. Never say never.
Can we get numbers as far as year to year, how many of our students are taking dual enrollment, how much that would have cost, how much this grant or how much this mill is paying for that, how much the students are paying?
I thought we had that. Something similar to that.
Yeah, I'm just asking for it. I mean, because it sounds like a very small percentage of what we're doling out is going to the students.
Push that out, but I'll deal with Wendy to find
that.
Yes, we can. To answer your question.
Yep.
That's shocker. Once again, I don't really care about all the the other stuff. I want it all to go to the students, high school students.
Okay. We're at Leadership Governance 2.11. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. This has to do with our facilities, transportation, nutrition. I think we've spent a lot of time on that today. I'm going to try something a little bit different with our leadership governance. I'm not sure if I can get it in July or August, where I will send it out to you and you can rate us on how we as a board are handling that. It's kind of like an evaluation process that we can do once a month on ourselves. And that will help us for...
So, Madam Chair, I've already mentioned to Dr. Miller that we'll try to create something virtual that can be pushed out.
Okay, great.
And he does have a end-of-the-year summative already kind of developed. So we are going to work with Sue Bellish after she comes back to help support that with you.
Okay.
Which I thought was a great training.
Okay. Madam Chair, for this... brings up a fairly interesting question for me. Charles says we just had the facilities and grounds here. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Hansen, no doubt, is probably in need of a nicer, bigger building. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your take on that? Where does that rank?
It doesn't.
How come?
Because there is... a lot of schools that are failing, and so to add to that, so we're going to have to work with the state to figure out where we're at with an alternative school, meeting those needs, so it's a ranking system of where that works, Dave. I already talked with Mike about this, some different approaches of what we look like and there, but I'm also going to say the boundaries, these are the conversations we're going to have as a board. at a certain point in time, Mike is turning away 20 people. So what are the parameters? You want 100 kids in the alternative school? Do you want 200 kids in the alternative school? I mean, at some point in time, you have to develop. We talk about a shell game. Kids come from Buffalo High School to the alternative school. You've got to be very careful. Now you're going to end up with two high schools in Johnson County once you start talking about numbers. Most alternative schools... okay, most alternative schools are 9-12 school, but they serve only a certain percentage. So maybe we base it instead of a number, a percentage of kids, and then we'll have to start having those conversations about what that facility looks like. The Schiffer School wasn't built, I'm just going to be very transparent, wasn't built through the normal process. That's about as far as I want to go with that piece. There was a different funding avenue for that, and then some districts just are an older building, so it is something we need to look at. But to be transparent, after what we learned on Wednesday, when you go to Campbell County High School and you see what they got for a facility, and you talk with one of the people there, and the square footage of New West is the same as another alternative school in another district that serves just a few more kids, which I don't know how that's possible, but anyway, their look at, their perspective is different. So you've just got to take a political approach with what that looks like. And as I explained to you, in my mind, Brandon School should not be above Lori School as far as replacement. So it's the numbers. It's kind of a game. It's a square footage and kind of what that looks like. However, there are some great ideas that we passed along. And that creativity piece is you've got to present to the board to get on that list for a facility. Campbell County's been trying to get Campbell County High School up on the list for almost 7 years now.
Didn't they just build a new high school?
This is Campbell County.
They got two high schools. So they got Campbell County. They do. So Campbell County High School has been on the list to be a rebuild for almost 7 years now. So you got to. I have to emphasize this more than once. This doesn't happen overnight, and I'm going to explain it to you as a board. Tensleaf is a great example. This is years and years and years. So we've got to get on the list now. And I don't ever want to make a promise to say, yeah, we're going to go make this happen in 3 years. It's just not going to happen, especially with the political climate that we're in. and this is coming, and I'll speak directly for Campbell County, $1.25 billion they've given back in recapture to the state of Wyoming to build other buildings, and they're not able to get funding for their old high school. So what that should paint a picture of the politics that kind of fall behind the buildings and the facilities. Okay.
But you also have to remember their evaluation is $4.7 billion, and ours is $407 million. Now, Connie said it went up. That's the difference, and that's why they are a region. That's why they get to pay so much.
I'm not arguing that. Yeah. I'm arguing the point. They give that kind of money back to build other buildings in the state, and they can't get their own building built within their own community. That money is to go to build other buildings, and they can't build their own. So through this commission, so there's some of those that you're absolutely right. They have a mineral industry, but can you understand the politics in Campbell County? Is we give this much money for other schools, and we can't take care of our own. So there's just some politics involved.
Okay. Consent agenda. Here we go. We have a motion to accept the consent agenda as presented.
So moved. They're all second.
Okay, thank you. Discussion? All those in favor of the consent agenda as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is approved. All right, now, the wrong way. All right, now we are actually now for action items. Okay, and the first one up. Oh, here we go. Let's go ahead and so we can discuss it. May I have a motion?
Make a motion to
wait a minute, no, because that's got to be. I may have a motion for the intent to levy $1 million for the Johnson County Recreation Board.
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
2 years. We want to make sure the motion is 2 years.
That's, well, we have before us a 1 year and a 2 year. I guess I need to ask through our discussion if we want to amend and say we go through 2 years, so we only have a hearing once every 2 years.
I think in light of things and what Randy has brought up, I would recommend that we go one year at a time and see where our valuation is and how much that is. If it's at 507, it might be at 750 million next year. So let's do 1 year at a time.
Can you explain a little bit about the reasoning for the 2 year again?
It's that on the rec board books, anything from January to July is actually deferred revenue, and it's a liability to them this year. And so they really, if we don't recommend a mill the following year, then they lose that money. So it's the craziness of how the state statute was put together. They're paying monthly instead of when they're actually levy. So, I know it's hard to explain.
Well, you got to back up because I didn't follow you.
No.
It's like either way, they're going to carry that liability the following year before COVID. So,
you guys keep the money and you allocate the money that you got last year. Not the money you're getting this year, but the money that last year. So, you always have that money in reserve.
I think what Connie is saying is the money that's already collected is from this year is being added into our bank account as it comes in. And so say we get $100,000 this week, it gets put in there, but we technically cannot allocate that until next year because it's, you know, collected this year. Well, if we don't approve it, then we have all this collected money for 12 months and say we decide, no, we're not giving you a mill. Now we have to go back and say, where does this go? Because we collected this money and it goes back to the taxpayers, and how do we return that? That's the biggest problem with how it's.
But
that's as simple as I can.
If we do this for 2 years,
it's going to end the same way.
It's
going to
end
that.
The same you're, way. Anyway, you're, so there's no point in doing it for 2 years.
So that is both.
We could do it for 5 years or 3 years. Or
you're correct.
It doesn't matter.
Yep.
So I would agree that a year at a time.
it's probably more appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. This is what was requested from Jack and the board to go 2 years, but it's totally up to you guys.
So what I'm hearing is 1 year? I guess we'll vote.
Yeah.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Are we voting on the motion for the 1 year?
Yes. Yes. That's the motion I made.
And a 1 mil, too.
And the one, and the 1 mil.
And the 1 mil. Levy, 1 mil for 1 year.
1 mil for
this
1 year.
Let me read the motion again. Okay.
You almost got me, Jan.
I almost did.
Trickery, Randy.
May I have a motion? This is what the motion said. For the intent to levy 1 mil for the Johnson County Recreation Board.
For 1 year.
For 1 year.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's what the motion should say.
All right. Everybody got it? We have a second?
We did.
I'm just making sure we had a second.
Then we voted. We just didn't get Randy's.
Yes.
I'm a no.
You're a no. Okay. motion is approved.
Madam Chair, point of order. Do we need to adopt this intent to levy resolution?
Yes, we do.
Tony Hill?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, I don't...
Chris, are you the treasurer? Would you read the levy? I mean, would you read the resolution?
Oh, gosh. Intent to levy resolution. Whereas on the 12th day of June 2023, the Board of Trustees of Johnson County School District Number 1 approved an intent to levy mills for the Johnson County Recreation District and the Sheridan Johnson Bochis for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2024. And whereas notice of such levy hearing was published in the Buffalo Bulletin, a newspaper having general circulation in Johnson County, the county in which the district is located, on June 8th, 2023. Whereas a public hearing was held concerning such intent to levy on the second Monday in June at 6 p.m., at which time all interested parties were given an opportunity to be heard. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Board of Trustees of Johnson County School District Number 1 that such an intent to levy is hereby approved and is in effect for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2024.
Madam Chair, I blew it. This is to approve the Bochis as well.
That should have been read after Bochis.
I got out of order. This is on me.
I'm only reading it once.
I was instructed, too, that we separate those.
They should be.
Two.
Yeah, you're kidding, and I blew it. My bad.
So, Jan, I will make a motion to...
Let me just get it right. May I have a motion for the intent to levy a half a mil for the Bochis?
For 1 year.
1 year.
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the half mil for Bochis for 1 year, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion passed. Where are we at now? We're at superintendent evaluation. All right.
Did I blow it again? Don't we have to?
We have to sign this, yes.
Now we need to approve what Chris
has been read. Okay. So now it needs to go around and get signed, whether you do it now or...
We'll do it at the end.
Yeah.
And even if you didn't approve of it, it's my pass, so we'll give you a signature. Now, remember what Sue said. Once we have a vote, you're there.
I signed under direct.
Okay. All right. May I have a motion to accept the superintendent evaluation as presented?
It's system.
System, I'm sorry.
So moved.
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor of the superintendent
evaluation? So, Jan, on discussion, when I read through the evaluation system, you evaluate the superintendent on a goal set.
Yes.
But you don't evaluate them for Charles or in the future on their day-to-day performance and whatnot. So I would ask, is that the way you want to do it, only on their goals?
Their goals are met by their day-to-day performance, though.
And the board can ask for whatever evidence of those goals achieved that we wish, so we can ask for performance evaluations.
And I shouldn't be talking because I wasn't able to be at the meeting.
No, but it's something that you need to know. We can qualify that for anybody by specifying what we wish to evaluate as proof that they're meeting the goal. So we can ask for day-to-day stuff.
And I wasn't on that committee. I know Jody was. You were. Yes. I forget who else was, but you had somebody else on the committee. And so if you guys are good with it.
It's a good question.
I'm good with it.
But that also emphasizes the importance of establishing goals.
Precisely. We've got to get those.
So when we're establishing goals and expectations for the year, we talked about SMART goals or achievable goals, but all of a sudden if you go to an evaluation and you get dinged for something you didn't know you were being held accountable for, I mean, that's why you as a board of trustees can say, hey, this is an area of growth, this is what you need to work on. It's giving you an opportunity. It's actually set time frames and dates, when we're going to do the evaluations, when we're going to do the goal setting. So for the public to know, like, my evaluation was last week, so now over the next month, your data comes in, I put comments, it comes back to you as a board, and then you will approve my evaluation in the July board meeting. So now you have systems in place, and we've already, Heidi and I already came up with some tweaks because it is a new system, but I think the word that came out of it was there was a lot of great communication that took place. So here's some things, this is what we're doing, and so we will establish goals. I've been charged with establishing those goals and presenting them out to you so you guys can tweak them, but we do definitely need to establish them at the July.
And as I understand it, Charles, correct me if I'm wrong here, the super also gets to A, look at the goals, and B, look at what we're asking for as evidence when we would review them that next year. So the super will be aware when we make the goal what it is he's got to show us to prove that he's doing what we asked. So we'll all be part of the discussion, including the super, so we're not sneaky snaking one in here that, we didn't know you were going to look at that. He'll be up on it too.
Good questions. All right. You bet.
So when we evaluate on these goals, it talks in here, purpose of evaluation is determine the effectiveness of the superintendent in achieving the goals of the district and adhering to job expectations. Is the goals the job expectations, or do we look at the job description as job expectations?
Think of it as both.
Well, I don't think his job description specifically has what we have asked, the goals that came in there. That's why I'm wondering if. Not that I've even seen an updated job description, superintendent, I'll be honest, but I just think it's something. I was on this committee and I do approve of it. I just think that that's something maybe we need a little more clarification in. And what are we saying when we say adhering to job expectations? And what are those expectations that he needs to be adhering to?
Aren't they the goals?
Not necessarily, I don't think. I mean, there's a lot of job expectations I have on my job, but it's not necessarily the goals that are set for me for my job. I mean, there's expectations of Are you there on time? Yeah. Are you working your shifts? I don't know what they all are. And you're based on your
goals.
Job description. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to word that, or if we want to change that, or because I don't feel like that was really evaluated when we did his evaluation. Look at the goals, and we hit a lot of things there. And there's a lot of things on it that we hit. But when you talk about job expectations, your expectations are formed from your job description. Or your goals are formed from what does Charles want to, what's his vision for Johnson County School District, and how does he want to achieve that, and what are his goals to make that, hit that vision. I mean, we have a vision, but what Charles, the superintendent, has, and that's kind of where I see his goals came in.
But the goals are established by you as a board.
Yeah.
We did those together, yes.
And would the expectations fall under leadership governance of what the superintendent's responsibility is and what the board's responsibility
seems
is?
Seems like the back half of those policies. I think you're right, but we need to define that.
Yeah.
Right, and then you should go back to the job description what you said and see if you're meeting the job description.
I don't know about... No, I think the leadership governance is where we should put the evaluation, not necessarily the job description.
I think you should look at both.
And you spent a lot of time, though, developing the leadership governance for the superintendent.
Yeah.
I think those are more important there.
Yeah, I believe the chairman's right that the leadership governance is actually what we're saying. This is what we insist on. The job description is more of a here's an idea. That's my understanding of it. So if I'm wrong,
not necessarily, Travis, because I think when you hire anybody and they hire on and you have this job description, are they meeting the job description? Are you doing what the job description says, unless you want to tweak it? But like I say, so I think you have to incorporate both into there myself.
I think the leadership governance is the job description, because we're saying as a board, this is what we expect of our superintendent. Anyway, are we ready to vote? Okay, all those in favor of approving this superintendent system, evaluation system, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Okay, policy revision. We are on the second reading. This is for leave of absence. So we have a motion to approve the policy GCBDI, the leave of absence.
So moved.
May I have a second, please?
Second.
Do we have any discussion? It's pretty forthcoming.
Any change from the last time, at least?
Yes, we are now going, 4 years instead of...
Same as first reading.
Right.
Same as the first reading.
That's probably the biggest.
So yeah, that's different from last year.
Okay, all those in favor of approving the policy, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same sign. Policy is approved. Okay, now we are on to activity sponsors and coaches renewal. May I have a motion to approve the activity sponsors and coaches for the 2023-24 school year?
So moved.
May I have a second, please?
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of the stated motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay. Motion is approved. Okay, now we are on to Eureka Math. May I have a motion to approve the Eureka Math Squared curriculum? Also in this would be, if you've noticed, would be the resources. Am I correct? Okay. So, may I have a motion, please? Again, it is to approve the Eureka Math Squared curriculum and resources. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Discussion? Mr. Miller, Dr. Miller, would you like to say anything about it?
Lori and Jake, you can jump in at any time. But we really firmly believe in a pilot method. We want to make sure that these resources are going to be successful for our students. So we had several teachers working the new Eureka Square, just the updated version, and some teachers using the current version that we've had, Eureka. And so we used data, we used conversation. We wanted our experts to be able to weigh in on the pros and cons of upgrading to Eureka Square. And so based on input from our principals and their teachers, they wanted to move forward with Eureka Square. With the cost tag on that, we are using federal funds if it gets approved. So we're trying to leverage our federal funds to update their math curriculum, in which they actually didn't have that opportunity a couple of years ago, right when Mr. Oski and I started. They approved a 612 SLOS curriculum, whereas K-5 didn't really have that opportunity. So we're just trying to catch up with the secondary math program.
In addition to that, we've been very diligent with our training. So there is PD tied to this, so that staff members are not going to be going into a school year not being familiar with the new resource as a whole. So we have PD tied to this in August, so it'll be right there, fresh and new, and the teachers will be ready to unpack the classrooms.
I think it's important to note, too, that it's the adoption of the UniSquared is truly staff-driven and based on student need. They've had the original UniSquared for 7 years, and my second grade team asked to pilot this at the beginning of this year, and I think you've heard the change in data both in YTOP math and the FastBridge math, and they've used it to fidelity, the Eureka Square this year, and really has led our building to look at it. They feel like it's a much more aligned process to the standards, and it's not so, I guess the other one was just so, I don't even know what the right word was. There were so many strategies presented. Almost every single week there was something new with whatever their focus was, and the students can keep up. You know, maybe that top 10-15%, but the rest of them were just kind of left, and it just moved so quickly, and it just wasn't appropriate for most of our learners' needs. And this new Eureka Squared has definitely been revamped to be much more palatable to the students. So.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Miller, just a couple questions. coming out of ESSER funds or grant growth?
Could be either ESSER or it could be Title I.
So you're not sure which one you'll fund it?
We're going to leverage it the best way and while we're juggling all these federal grants. So that's partially a Connie question, but we're not going to use general funds for this now.
So is it just we have Eureka Math in this square. Is this just a new and improved math? Is that what you'd call it? Because we've been teaching math for 100-some years, and just 2 + 2 is, they come up with a better way to teach it? I'm just asking because I'm not an educator.
Well, it's based on, like Lori said here, the strategies. There's systematic strategies of building skill sets, and it's, as Eureka was, there was multiple strategies given to students at times, and it overwhelmed them, whereas Eureka Squared lays it out a little more sequential.
And so it's new textbooks, digital everything, is that?
There is included? Digital, yes, there's digital components.
Is it new textbooks and stuff you mean?
It's a workbook.
New workbooks.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when they bring in a new reading system. Yeah. Any other discussion? All right, so may I have all those in favor of approving the Eureka Math Square curriculum and resources, signified by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have a new math program. Okay, from the board. I'd like to remind everyone that on next Monday, what's that day? 19th. We will be having our second board retreat. Sue Bellish will be here. I thought last time went really well. It was great for our new ones, and it was a great review. And we have to come up with a way that we are going to evaluate ourselves for our peer review. Correct, Mr. Roskin?
That is correct.
Okay. Anything else from the board?
Well, let me go back. Effective school districts have a self-evaluation at year, all right? So this is part of just creating systems in place where you as a board are evaluating yourself.
And that's
in some form or fashion on leadership governance.
Leadership governance. Yeah. That's why we're going to try and...
Yep.
Okay. Again, that's Monday, 6 o'clock, and she holds to a time schedule. We will be finished at 8 o'clock. I hope you all can be there.
Madam Chair, with that real quick, how many people are going Thursday night to the shared 3 dinner with the other boards?
That's a D.
What night is 12?
We need to know. I'm trying to work my schedule out to go.
They're asking if it's this Thursday.
I'm not able to make it.
So if you could please look at your calendars and let Heidi know by noon tomorrow, they're asking for an encounter. Just the air name.
I moved last year. I was the only one who was able to go, and this year I cannot. I have a previous game. Okay. Other business, we had a discussion, HR position consideration. Kristen?
I just wondered, it's come up a couple of times in just quick conversation, the idea of whether we need an HR position for the district. And I just wanted to circle back to that to see what you guys think of it. I realize it's budget time and a half. Also, I know the position's expensive, but I feel like we do a lot of our HR work retroactively by having to use our legal counsel as our HR person, which she's phenomenal, and I'm so grateful she does it. I just think it'd be nice to be a step ahead instead of putting out fires later. And I, well, it depends on how Charles feels about it too, but I feel like it would be beneficial for Charles to be able to focus on other matters instead of having to take that hat on and off several times a day. So I just wondered what you guys thought.
So for me, I'd just like to speak. So first of all, yeah, it's been a crazy 5 months, 6 months, 12 months. Amanda Esch is part of the human resource with Davis and Cannon that we've done a lot of work with, especially over the last 4 or 5 months. Through this process, they reference it as a risk manager, not an HR person, just due to the Title IX issues, the personnel complaints. It's more of a risk manager position. So we've spent a lot of time together, but that managing of what that piece looks like, again, I appreciate it, but when we're going to start making some big cuts, I've asked them to actually, I just can't support hiring somebody until we get cuts. However, I'm not putting it off because it takes up a lot of time. It's very time consuming throughout the day. So they're in the process of developing a flow chart of how you handle protocol, what the principal's responsibility is at each building level, and then passing that down, the protocol down to ADs, down to the building principals. What do you do in this scenario of events? Here's the flow chart that goes to this. So they're working to make this more efficient and then provide the training so we can train some people to handle some of these HR issues or risk management things. So, again, truly appreciate it. I know there's been a lot of work with them over the last 4 months, a lot of work. But the reality is they're trying to – one of the things I like about what Bridget's doing and Amanda's doing, they also know the school district's in a crunch, so how can we be more efficient? So they started that draft flowchart. I would like to see it by the end of July, so they're working on that. I'd like the ability to present that to you as a board of trustees, and then maybe some of the training that goes along with that piece. Is that fair?
Any other comments, Madam Chair? I give this a lot of thought, too, wondering, and my question, or what I guess I wanted to figure out, Charles did answer. I was curious as to, you know, what the funding for what we spent with using our attorney that we have working for us, as opposed to what we'd be adding for another administrative position. And then...
So
I just look at the team. Charles, like Charles, has the head of the team, and then the support of all of his principals and his building administrators. And so, I'm not opposed, but I'm not. I'm also not. I want to be fiscally responsible and use the funds that you know that we're already putting out. And
I want to say this has been an extraordinary year. You have a federal investigation. You've had audits. You've had. Third-party investigations. So there's really, to say where that cost is, I'm hoping that kind of levels out because there's been a lot of main triggers that I would agree. The amount of money we spent just on this federal investigation is extraordinary. To save $1.7 million just to keep ourselves out of hot water. And I want to make it known that's because we had a whistleblower internally that were there. But what's the positive that came out of it? The positive came out of it. We've changed procurement policies. We've changed some different things. You know, we are We're the only district in Wyoming, and I want to be transparent when I say that. Other districts have spent money, but we put the brakes on because we were the only one that, we're probably the only district in the state that's on a corrective action plan for federal grants and been through a federal investigation with where that is. In addition to that, we paid money back to the state. We have another blitz audit, which I don't think will be as great as the last return in funding. But there's some legal fees that I hope we don't see every year as we look through that. But I would, once we can say, and the business office can say where we're at with our funding, we can maybe look at a risk manager. Maybe there's some different things that can kind of help mitigate some of that. But I will tell you, Amanda, who lives in Cheyenne right now, is going to live in Sheridan. She's moving up here, I think, this summer. So she's a little closer instead of some virtual things. That will be a part of that process. But I will say what we hired in Davis and Cannon is pretty extraordinary with especially the HR piece that they've been through. So I just need to do a better job of delegating, which I think is the direction we're at. But that delegating comes back to that flow chart of who's responsible for what. So hopefully they'll create some of that.
So, Jen, my comment would be is, you know, I don't disagree with an HR person, but when you hire more staff and we know what the budget is, you've got to give something up, you know. So what are you willing to give up? And I'm going to go back to what Randy said at the last meeting. And I did look at the SR2, and the SRO officer is something that I really think could benefit this district. So, a thought.
So that is in the SR3 grant. So
it was in the two.
So
back in the also.
So SR3 is part of that, where it's a hybrid. But I must be transparent to the community and to you guys. We're going to balance our staff with what we're committed to and all that. We're right with SR3 funds, but. Maybe I need to get law enforcement in here, but they can't hire the people to stay afloat with that and to hire an SRO and maintain and sustain that for the long term is going to be super, super difficult too. Not that I don't want our school safe and I don't want to do some of the programs that we're doing, but one SRO for six buildings that will end up probably spending majority of their time at just athletic events and split between buildings and talking with our local law enforcement, it takes the right person to do it, and they're having a hard time filling their staff with the right people to do the right job. So I get where you're coming from, but it is the same piece in that. But if you're committed to an SRO, we got to have that same conversation that what's coming off the plate, and then what are we going to meet with a full-time SRO in this district? And I'll speak for what I think. The parent liaison is making a huge improvement with our at-risk families and those younger groups. And our commitment this summer is to try to find a collaborative donors in the community and some things to sustain that program. So there's a lot of great programs out there, but you're absolutely right, Dave. What comes on, something must come off.
And that would be the same with an HR, right?
Yeah. It's in the paper. We're $2.9 million away in 3 weeks. That puts us $500,000 short of making payroll in July. I mean, we've got some challenges in front of us. I mean, when the reality is that we're saying these things, and then, yeah, you play the, I mean, I'm starting to use Randy's terminology now, the shell game.
I don't think we should use that.
So you're influencing off. But there's the shortfall that comes in that piece, because in 60 days, the way the 100, which she's waiting for to come back, we give it out, we're a short deficit, and then we get it back. I mean, those are some things we need to change with legislation that we're kind of talking about through this process. And, you know, as we kind of move, so we do have some challenges. And I greatly appreciate the conversation. You've got to hear that. I don't necessarily think it's an HR. It's maybe more of a risk management position, that if we could open that up in the future or something that looks like that. But I'm hoping what Amanda and Bridget are trying to create for the district will solve some of these issues too. Okay.
So Charles, if I could ask, so we're going to have, we have a shortfall. We may have to transfer some money now. I'm still not clear. If you could explain it to me, why we pay the special ed out of the general fund instead of special ed. I know I asked you in March or April, and I darn if I got my head
okay, around. Okay, so if you remember, part of my goal is to start leveraging federal funding to support our budgets, all right? Well, okay. Part of that is you have special ed, which I just talked about, Val. She has that grant that she's applied for. Well, in addition, in the state of Wyoming, we're one of the few states that has 100% reimbursable special ed, just like transportation. Okay, we have over $300,000+ that was out here in the federal grants that we should have been pushing into our general budget so that we get reimbursed for that. So we're pushing that in so that then those federal funds that she applies for, we can leverage to manage our budget. So this was the year to push some of those outside expenses into our general budget so that next year we get reimbursed for that to help with our funding.
So before, how often do you get reimbursed for special ed? Is it quarterly, semi-annually, or annually?
It's a monthly payment.
It's monthly. So, okay. So you submit it and they pay you within a month.
Yep.
Okay, very good.
Yep.
No. No.
Sorry.
No. So we submit it at the end of the year, right?
On our at the end of the year, at the June 30th.
After June 30th. Actually, August 14th is when the report is due. So let's say they're going to, that our reimbursement equals $3 million. So they're going to pay that back to us over 10 months.
It's not just one month, it's monthly. It's the entitlement payment that we've all got forever. It's just now special ed is going to be different.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
They took it out of the...
Yeah. Okay.
I know, it's confusing to date, and what I try to tell, sometimes I get a little, seem to get frustrated with is, you live this 24/7. We don't. And so sometimes we need to hear it. Three, four, five, a dozen times.
The public and the board to understand that transition, that move was a strategic move to put things into our budget so that we can start using other resources. And I'm going to use Mike as an example. So, Dr. Hansen. So he went out, he's supporting what we're doing with the culinary through that piece. Jake does it with Perkins Grant. He came in today and used the verbiage that I do. Charles, there's cables tied to this next grant, okay, that he wants to apply for. Well, we're getting used to winding up cables and extending them, so we kind of know what that looks like. But we need to start doing it, and special ed is a very expensive endeavor. Is that a correct way of saying it? Every day can be different. So the more we can push into our general budget, which right now is 100% reimbursable, we're one of the few states in the nation that do it, that we're leveraging that so that we can have other funding to kind of support the programs on the outside. However, the complication to that is you have to meet the MOE. So once you spend it, you got to continue to spend it or you have to defend it. So there, now we're getting into the so complicated thing of a special world, special ed. But however, we interpreted that this new legislative law wouldn't impact till next year. However, it impacted now. So when it impacted now, that amount of money that we sent into this impacted where we're at with this recapture or this overpayment thing. We were on track until we all learned that it was in that place. I don't know, I probably made it more complicated than I need to, but it is complex. But the overall picture, Dave, is we're trying to push it into this fund so that we can use that other fund for other stuff down the road that it's unforeseen.
And we get reimbursed for this
one. We get reimbursed for this one.
Well, you're going to get reimbursed either way. If you wouldn't have took the money out of the general fund to pay for it, then you probably would have had money.
It has to be in the general fund to get reimbursed.
From the state.
From the state.
Not your grants.
Okay. So do you get reimbursed from the state or the federal government?
It's the state.
But isn't special ed a federal program? So the state gets reimbursed from the feds?
It's part of the...
Two buckets of money.
It's two different buckets of money. This bucket of money that Val applies for, we don't get reimbursed for. We just get an allocated every year. We say, we don't get to say, hey, how much we want. They just give us a number and say, you fill out all this paperwork and we might give you this money. And then whatever we have in the general fund is based on our actual expenditures. That's what they reimburse. So we're trying to take this pot over here, put it in our special ed, which is most districts do, which is reimbursable, and then allow us to use our federal grants to support special ed from the outside. So you're right on both occasions, but the reimbursable is only from the state. The federal government tells us how much we can get.
Okay, the APQC training.
Yeah, what's that?
APQC training.
Okay, so at the end of the month, a combinational effort with Sheridan 3, Sheridan 1, potentially Sheridan 2, and Johnson. Oh, I just have the document up. Okay, so this is a service I talked about. This is similar to, and I'm just going to use Douglas as an example. They brought them in along with a lot of other work. But it talks about doing a combination where we come in and they start looking at our scope and what we're doing as a district and start trying to find, what do I say, efficiencies and creating systems of efficiencies with how we manage people. So when somebody leaves, we're kind of already starting to do it. And somebody new comes in, you don't upset the apple cart. So they kind of come in, they look at your overall systems. So this would be a meeting with you as a board of trustees, and then we would bring in our supervisors. So this is facilities, technology, food service. We'd bring them in, we'd start looking at some of what those efficiencies are. So it's just kind of a kickoff, and then we would determine, you know, kind of that work if we wanted to continue work with them. But it is a professional development training for supervisors and for boards to kind of look at what we're doing as a district. Are we efficient? What are some of the things? What are policies or things that we need to have in place? So it is more of a supervision, a supervisor level type of training.
Where would it be held?
Well, it will be held at Sheridan College. Attempt Sheridan College. If they give us a room, or I think they will. If not, it will be in somebody's room, and then they will come to Johnson County for a half a day. They'll be Sheridan 3 and then Sheridan 1. So it's basically a presentation to the board, then an all-day training somewhere, Sheridan College, and then they'll be on-site for each individual district. And that is basically the end of July.
Okay.
So, okay. Travis, I have that document now. I haven't got it out, but I will copy that to all of you.
I'm just looking at the calendar. All right. We've already talked about the picnic in Sheridan.
But, Charles, I want to be clear on that. I think you said it was this Thursday, and it's July 15th.
Two different invites.
Two different, yeah.
He's having a lot of picnics.
Do lots of picnics.
The one at the end of July is not a picnic. It's a training.
You put in our many meeting minutes that the picnic was July 15th, and it's actually June 15th. You put it, it's in here, it says July 15th.
It said July 15th.
Yeah.
So that's wrong. Yeah. Is that correct?
Look at
then you should say June.
What's that, John?
Yeah, it says July
15th. I think the picnic should say June.
Yeah, you have July 15th.
Not July
15th. Yeah, I'm with you, but I think we got two different events.
Okay, that's where I was confused.
It's always been June. This is okay.
Pretty easy to confuse. Sorry. So let's scratch that now.
So in the board agenda, I apologize to the public that I put July 15th.
Okay.
Maybe you can have one in July too then.
No. State Board of Education meeting, I think you've already covered that, Mr. Oski. And when is our presentation?
11:30.
Thursday?
So not to confuse it, but our presentation is Thursday at 11:30, and then the picnic is at Sheridan 3 at 6.
Okay.
It's a very busy day.
And another work session on June 28th, and that will be strictly budget. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And we already know that one of our board members will not be.
We did decide.
I think that's awesome. And if you're not able to attend, please give Heidi a call. That would help. The July work session will be July 5th. And the board meeting will be July 12th.
So one of the things on the agenda that
July
10th.
July 10th, excuse me.
That we'll talk about for the work session is it will be budget, but we're also going to add the AI committee, artificial intelligence, and talk about we need to have some things in place by August. So there will be a group of very high-level presenters from our district presenting to you about the challenges with artificial intelligence and how it's going to impact education and how we need to establish some, I would say, guidelines, not rules, but similar thing, I guess, around what we're going to do with this new type of technology that is going to impact education, okay?
And that'll be at our work session, correct?
That is correct.
June 28th.
No, July.
Okay, the actual work session. All right.
Different.
We have a motion to enter into executive session as per Wyoming Statute 16-4-405 for personnel matters.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
There will not be any action items when we come out.